What up?
Episode 12.
What's up?
Do
you remember that?
Yeah, from Scary Movie.
Oh, I thought they were Bud. Wasn't it Bud Light?
Oh, maybe that was like a parody of it or something. But I just remember they go,
it's a commercial where they did that. But yeah, it was a Scary Movie.
Yeah, and he would like answer the phone and he'd be like, hello? And he'd say, what's
that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was from a commercial.
Okay.
So week 12, man.
Week 12. Two more than 10.
That's 3 full months.
That's true. 3 months? Whew. It doesn't feel like it's been that long.
No, I mean, that's what's exciting about this. It just took one decision. We started it, and we've been able to be consistent. You know, I think that's a great intro to this week's episode. We're going to be talking about learning.
Yes.
Hopefully, I have something to teach you.
Yeah.
I like to learn. I'm not super good at it, but.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like teaching is sometimes the best way of learning. Like, you learn something and then you get good enough at it and then you're able to become a teacher. And I feel like that just, it makes you learn it even more because you have to think of all the little intricacies of what you're teaching because you want to be a good teacher. So you have to be a good student to be a good teacher.
That's 100% true. And as you were saying that, I was thinking about when I was trying to teach you to golf or teach you to play baseball, it actually helped me to understand my philosophy for one of the two sports or baseball, or especially when it came to golf, because I was actually kind of working on my own golf game at that point. But I was trying to explain to you, you know, what you needed to do, what your positions needed to be. And I guess most of the time when I was speaking, though, I was able to speak in a very, very visual way.
Right.
But I had a hard time teaching you the feels. And I think that was because of the fact that sometimes in my own game, I didn't really understand what I should be feeling or what I should. But if I could explain to you not only the visuals, what you should be feeling, I was able to actually give you a good understanding of what I understood as to how to do it properly.
That makes sense. I feel like for me, like in high school or anything, when I would try to help a teammate out, I was kind of the opposite. And like, I knew how it felt. I knew how to go through the motions, but trying to actually put it into words and put it in like through mechanics or something, it was kind of difficult for me. Whereas, I don't know, a lot of the times it ended up with me just being like, I would try to get my point across and I'd try to get my point across. But then when that didn't make sense, it was always just kind of like, I don't know, it just happens. It just feels right, you know? It's just, I don't know. I was kind of the opposite.
It feels right when you're doing it or when you're trying to teach it?
Yeah, when I'm doing it. But then I have a hard time coming across that way with my words and being able to actually teach it that way.
You know, that's interesting. A while back, the PGA Tour had posted something on Facebook, and it was a post, and it was like, what does a good iron shot feel like, or what does it sound like? And people were saying a lot of different things, and I was just like, man, a lot of these don't sound right. And for me, it seemed like it was very simple. And to me, a good iron shot felt like a piece of celery getting broken. And it was just like, it's that, you know, it's that it's that soft, solid snap. Huh. And it was just like, why was that so difficult? Like, it seems super simple.
Yeah.
But going into what you're saying, I think one of the best ways to know if someone is a good teacher is how well they can simplify what it is that they're teaching to be able to share that with others. And also the ability to hit the senses and to be able to tell how people learn best. So you have visual, you have auditory. I actually wrote all of these ones down. Visual, auditory, some people learn through reading. Reading, writing, logical. And so if you're teaching a class, and you have a variety of these different students who learn from a variety of different ways, you have to present the topic and hit each one of those ways so that you're giving each one of those children an opportunity to be able to learn. And I think for me, like when I was going back to the baseball, like some people learn better from like reading it and just logically seeing it. But some people, and I think specifically for me, and Isaac was talking about this last week, he went to a course to learn to further his career about learning the automotive industry and how to do it. And it was all book knowledge. And he was like, man, usually when we have these classes, they actually have the piece or the things we're working on, and I can do the hands-on, I can touch it, I can feel it. Because once you start getting into a complex system like a vehicle where there's moving parts, and it's not just a philosophy of 1 + 1 = this. It's like, well, it's turning like this, but it's inside of this axle part. And it's like, I get super complicated. I remember when I was doing that and trying to watch tutorials when I was working in the automotive industry, it was really, really difficult. Whereas I would have preferred it just to be right here. I can touch it. I can feel it. But again, I guess that's based on what it is you're learning too. Like for golf, oftentimes I was just trying to get to specific points and I was forgetting to feel the weight shift or where my wrists were or whatever that was.
Yeah. I feel like for learning, for me, if I'm just reading it and that's all I have, there, it's not going to stick at all. Like if I'm reading for like in my free time for something that I'm just interested in reading, then sure, I'll be able to read it and I'll enjoy it. But if I'm just reading like back in school, if it was just books and then questions after that, it just never stuck quite right. Whereas if the teacher like drew up an example or like there was a model or something you could, I don't know, physically touch, but just reading it, I don't know, it just never struck me.
So you would say you're a very visual learner?
Yeah, either visual or I have to actually do it.
Okay, which I think they said is a kinesthetic.
Okay.
Their hands-on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so what about this is that there's a lot of people who, instead of just doing reading books, they're listening to audiobooks. When you read an audiobook, do you feel like you're able to comprehend it as much as when you're reading, or vice versa?
Yeah, I feel probably it sticks better when it's an audiobook, because I feel like when I'm reading, it's, I don't know, especially if I'm not particularly interested in the subject, or maybe I am interested in it, but it's just using like boring words, I guess. I don't know. Something that doesn't really draw me in. It's like I can listen to something and take the things out of it that I want to take out of it. But reading, I just like start reading down the page and then I start just drifting off, and then I have to go all the way back. It's like I flip the page and it's like I didn't read any of that page, so I have to go back and then do it again. And it's like after the second page you flip and you didn't read anything, it's like, okay, maybe I'm just gonna put the book up.
Wow, that's really interesting, because to me, it's I'm different in the audiobooks, is that sometimes I'll just be there and I'll be listening and I'm daydreaming all the way over here.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, I got to go back 30 minutes because I did not hear any of that. Where I found, for me, it's super helpful when I'm reading is that I usually say it aloud, or if I'm in like a public place, it's just, you can always at least see my lips moving or whatever. Maybe I'm saying it silently, but that really helps me to be able to internalize and try to, I mean, they say that the best way to learn, especially when it comes from book, is reading, speaking, and writing. So writing your own. And I know like in ancient traditions, so in Jewish culture, when someone was learning the Bible at 13 years old, pretty much everybody had written their own Torah. So they had read it, seen it, vocalized it, and also written their own to be able for memorization and stuff.
Yeah, it just kind of brings in muscle memory at the same time. It's like you remember writing it, so you just remember it more, I guess. I can definitely, I'm definitely that way too.
And so even, let's say it came to a subject, maybe it was like self-improvement or philosophy or something like that, still you would prefer to have it somehow written on a board or try to be given some type of example so you can visually see it to comprehend it?
Yeah, I think so. Like a lot of the time, especially at work, like I do a lot of stuff for the first time. Like say I'll go, I'll go dig up a gas line or something and I'll have to repair it. And here's where it's at. I just need to watch out for this stuff and this stuff. But I feel a lot more comfortable if I can like draw a little picture and then my boss says, hey, this is where it's at. This is what it looks like. Or I'll look up a picture online. It's like, this is what it looks like. Cause before I dig in there, I do so many different things for the first time that it's like, I'm not repeating the same thing over and over. So I don't know what a lot of stuff is. So I'll like look up a picture and be like, oh, okay. So I have to do that before I actually get there. And that way I'm not, I don't know, I'm more knowledgeable on the subject when I'm there, I guess.
Which your job is much more labor intensive, right? So you're doing specific actions that result in the work being accomplished versus my job. It's more in the legal field. And so we have a lease, which is our Bible. It's 50 pages long. And so while that lease through the application process is what someone who's applying to an apartment needs to read and comprehend, most of the time they don't. So then they get into the property and they start maybe possibly breaking the rules or not understanding what things are and stuff like that. And then I have to be the one who goes back over and says, listen, this is what the lease states, is that inside your apartment, 80% of it has to be covered with carpet so that when you're walking around at night, you're not disturbing the people below you. Like, that's why we have hardwood floors here. The guest policy is that anyone who stays at your apartment can only live there for 7 days or less a month, or they have to be on the lease because they're considered an occupant. And the reason for that is because we do a screening process. We do a background check. We want to make sure that people are living here have been vented properly. And so, again, I can't write these things down or circle all these things. It has to be memorizing this 50-page Bible of the property and highlighting it and just, you know, maybe highlighting the points. Because you have a paragraph and it's like, well, this is what it's essentially saying. And so if I highlight this point, okay, I go back to there. Okay, that's what that is. And then I can remember everything. So I think that's, has to do with the type of learning and what it is you have to do in your job or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people think of like the lease, like you were saying, kind of like terms and conditions for like anything. Like that they like read it, but they don't really read it. And then when they start violating it, it's like, oh, I didn't read that. But it's like, doesn't matter. You signed it. So.
Right. Or they read it and they don't understand it. Then you have the people who are applying and they read the whole thing. And then they have questions about every small. It's like, just sign the damn thing. Yeah. Like, these aren't supposed to be things. I'm going to apply to you. Yeah. That's not what it's saying. And so you're looking too far into it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh my gosh. But for me, getting started into this learning episode, you know, there's something, education's used to actually mean something. Where you had to be able to read something and then formulate your own opinions and ideas and then be able to articulate them to others. And in order to do that, you had to understand things properly. And I think, you know, back probably in the 80s and 90s, that's why college meant so much, is that people would go to college and there would be a higher level of education that people would actually go through to be able to learn that. And I think, you know, right now, college seems to be lessened because of how much technology it has advanced, and what we have with YouTube and online learning and all those things is it to the point where you pay all this money to go to a school. And if you're in a specific niche industry that you've learned, it could be really difficult to turn that into a career or to be able to use those skills, which I'm sure you're educated. But that's just something I don't know. I've just noticed over time where it doesn't seem to be as beneficial as it used to be, where it used to be everybody who went to college could have a much larger income off the bat. Now, I think going back on it, if I was ever going to recommend anyone, you know, what to do, I would always recommend to go to college, mainly because of the point that I brought over, is that I would say that by me just going for 2 years, I didn't take super difficult classes that forced me to have to be able to comprehend things and then vocalize them to others and have my own opinion and understanding, or maybe have a conflict or be able to debate that specific topic because I didn't agree with it 100%. And I never really, I think maybe sometimes the subjects were too boring to me or I didn't enjoy them enough to be able to do that. But it wasn't until I really started getting deep into religion and studying that to where I learned how to be able to, you know, maybe do a dissertation, which, you know, is someone, something, you know, that's a piece of a paper that people write as they're graduating colleges, usually for their doctorate. But they have to be able to understand something very, very well and then be able to teach it, argue the points, and then suggest how something should change.
Right. Yeah, and I think like with you said, like you said, college is becoming more and more, it's less important than it used to be. I think it's just because like technology is so, you have so much knowledge at your fingertips at all times, where it's like experience is more than actually just reading a book and learning about it and going through a class. Because you can go through all these classes, but do you actually, you know the theory, but do you know how to actually put that theory into practice? And I feel like just getting experience in it is better than learning all the ins and outs of it, because you actually get in the subject and you're doing rather than just learning about it.
Yeah, and like you were talking about with technology, how much is advanced, right? So we just got the Daily Wire Plus membership. Mm-hmm. And then the amount of lectures that are on that program and just how much information there's. Also, the quality of the teachers also affects how well you can learn and your ability to learn quite greatly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you, like in high school, how well you got along with your teachers, or there were some teachers where they could just explain things very, very well. Yeah, maybe they were easier topics or subjects to explain, but some of them just grasped the material and they were just had that ability to teach versus others just kind of being there and explaining something.
Yeah, I feel like
there's a big difference.
I feel like there's definitely some teachers that I had that weren't necessarily like easier subjects, but it's just like, it's almost like they were more passionate about teaching, which I don't know. It's just more engaging for the students. Like, I don't know. You can tell when somebody is passionate about something they're talking about or teaching or whatever. And it's, you can tell when somebody's being genuine, and that is attractive to everybody. It's like the students wanted to learn more because the teachers actually wanted to teach. They weren't just, they didn't see it as their job or this is how I make money, so I have to wake up tomorrow, I have to go to school. It's like, no, I want to actually affect these kids' future. I want them to learn subjects. I want them to learn how to problem solve. And I feel like that had a big impact on actually learning the subject.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I think most of the times that most teachers wanted to teach. It wasn't like they were just doing it to make money, because let's be honest, there's not that great of money. It may be just sometimes their approach or what, again, going back to how well they learned, and maybe they were a specific type of learner and that's how they always tried. So sometimes they hit the nail on the head with those kids who learned in that specific way and it really helped them and it influenced them. But when they weren't vast in their knowledge of how to teach, this struggle. And so that goes into another point of mine is, you know, if you're going to look for a teacher or a coach, always look out for someone who has a vast array of knowledge on that subject, and then who can look at your skill set and to see where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are, and then tailor that teaching and that coursework specifically to what you need. And the two major aspects of life where I really started seeing the importance of teaching and how to really try to suit these for people's needs was, one, as I was learning the different aspects of religion, Christianity, Judaism, and then two was in golf. And I think these two, even they're totally completely different subjects, is that how they're taught. The golf swing has a lot of different philosophies, just like religion does. There's there's people who think that one way of swinging a golf club is the only way, and if you don't do it that way, you're never going to be any good. And those people, they get stuck in their head, and sometimes they struggle and they can't figure it out. And that, you know, with you look at the kinesiology of the body and the anatomy of the body and how it's made up, and we're all different sizes, shapes, and flexibility levels and those types of things. And there's some people who can't get their wrist right here at 90 degrees to be able to get in certain positions. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to work with them so that at impact, or that they can most make the most efficient swing with the least amount of effort possible in a continual basis as many times as possible. So be as consistent as they possibly can. And that's what it's about. And so that's why I always wanted to try to find a teacher who knew about all the different swing philosophies, but that he was taking me, my body type, where I was at, and then tailoring whatever that type of teaching was to me. And there was a guy named Michael Hebron, and he wrote a book called The Inside Moves the Outside. And it was all about just kind of working together with your body. And that was all it was about, is that you can get in all these different positions and do all these different things and figuring out what works for you. So for me, putting cross-handed worked very, very well. It helped me to keep my shoulders square, to not use my wrists a lot. A belly putter also really, really helped me a lot to be able to make really good putts where I wasn't missing right or left. My distance control with the putter was always really pretty good. And so it was really all about aim, and that was it. And so once I was able to get those things, it helped. But other people, that didn't help. I it was about being a scientist about whatever it was that you were wanting to learn, right? So some days I would put the ball in the back of my stance. Sometimes I would put it in the front of my stance, and I would just science, back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, when you really want to learn something, you have to have tunnel vision, and you have to create at some point when you have this vast array of options from this coach that's teaching you or what you're learning, you have to find one thing and you have to stick with it. And that was one of the struggles, biggest struggles I had in golf, is that one day I would go out and I would be this, and I'd be like, oh, I heard this YouTube video or this, and now I'm going to go do this. And this is what I've kind of brought up with social media. And if you're trying to do some type of personal improvement, or you're trying to benefit your life, and you see reels and you see 70 reels and they're all contradicting, it's like, what? You're just messing with your mind. It's not good. It does not help you to be able to get in a solid state of mind.
Right. And that's like you were saying with the whole golf situation. It's like you just have to find something that works for you. Like you see Tiger Woods, you want to have a swing like Tiger Woods, but then you see a swing like Jim Furyk's, and it's like it's not about that. It's just about what you can do. Just figure out what works for you. Can you do it consistently? If you can't do it consistently, then it's not going to work for you. It's something you can repeat over and over and over and get the same result, that's going to work for you, regardless if it's the ugliest swing you've ever seen. If it works for you, then it works for you. I mean, you're not going to put yourself through something that you can't repeat and you struggle with every single day, regardless of if you practice it or not. It's just not going to work if it's not suited for you.
Right, and you made a great example of Tiger Woods, Jim Furyk, two very different golf swings, but there are certain foundational truths about the golf swing that they had in common. Timing, tempo, rhythm, stance, distance away from the ball, where they would put their, you know, hit their sand wedge, back foot, and all of those types of things. They were very, very small, fundamental things, which made them very, very alike in many ways. Mm-hmm. Well, at the end, it was the only thing that was really different was how they took the club back and how they got it to square. And that was it. And maybe one of them was more efficient. I think if you look at Tiger Woods' driving accuracy and his distance, he was able to be much more consistent, and especially when it came to winning. But again, you go back to mindset too, right? So I think, dude, this is something I've always had a dream. If I could interview someone, I would really want to interview Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and I think Mike Tyson. I don't know how he is now, but to just have all three of those guys sit there and talk together and try to say, what is your mindset like? Because I think that at the point of their primes, that they had to have been so arrogant and so confident in what they were doing, where maybe they wouldn't have really, they would have sounded like, you're just a jerk, but they had to do that to be as successful as they were. And I don't know any other way for them to do that.
Right. And it's like, I don't remember who was on the podcast the other day, but I heard something. It's like they went to the pyramids or something, and they went into this room, and there was a high vibrational frequency, and it was something that was very, I don't know, it was very energetic, and it made them very excited. But I don't know if you know who Georges St. Pierre is, but he's like a really, like, up for debate for one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time. And okay. he went and had that experience, and it was such a heightened experience for him. And he's been retired for I don't know how long, but he used to be one of the greatest fighters in the UFC. And at the end of that experience, he was like, I'm coming out of retirement, I'm going to win the UFC, the title belt. But it's just like, he didn't come out of retirement. He didn't even try to act on that. But it's just something in the moment where he felt that. It's like that champion's mentality. It's like, I'm at this heightened experience. I feel like I'm on top of the world. I cannot lose. I'm coming out of retirement. I'm going to beat anybody. I don't care. It's just that that whole mindset of, I feel like Tiger had that. I feel like Michael Jordan had that. It's just that confidence boost of feeling unstoppable. And it's like, you need that to be at that very top level. Like, you can't be doubting yourself for a second. It's like, I know this is what I've put so many hours into, therefore I'm confident in my ability, and I know it's going to work. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But you can't be a true champion, an absolute elite of the elite, if you're sitting there questioning your ability throughout the whole entire thing.
Yeah, and there's another thing that I used to notice back when I was playing a lot of golf, and I could tell how good someone was is going to be, and I still can do this, especially when it comes to professional sports teams. And it's how much time they spend hanging out with their competition and having fun. I remember back in like the 2014s is that you had like some of the Jordan Spieth and some of these golfers, and they were always going out and hanging out for boys club and boys time. And it's like, yeah, it's great to have friends, but these are your competitors. Like, again, maybe their will to win isn't as much as my spirit. Like, if I'm playing a sport, I want to crush everybody that I'm playing against. Like, I want to step on their throat. Like, here in this office, we're at 95% occupied. So we have 6 apartments. And so I keep saying, hey, we got other buildings popping up. Like, let's just keep on. They're like, hey, we're at 96% occupied. It's like, yeah, but we have other properties coming up. There's other properties going to be building up. We're not in COVID times anymore where everybody's just moving down here to South Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, let's keep the foot on the gas. And it's like, no, like, we'll just wait till we're 89. It's like, no, we're not going to wait. What do you mean we're going to wait till we're at 89% occupied? When we're at 89% occupied, that is too late. Mm-hmm. Like, they've already won. Like, Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, after they won a championship, they were like, oh, okay, well,
yep.
we'll wait to practice after we lose 10 games. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just like, what are these people doing? Like, spending time, enjoying life with their competitors, if this is their job and if this is what they would take seriously. We would never would have seen Tiger Woods doing something that, Michael Jordan doing something like that. And I think sometimes, if you look at them, they didn't have that many friends because they were so focused, and some people were so kind of offended by what they were. Like, they weren't like Kobe. I don't think he was a super likable person, mainly because he wasn't a super great teammate, but he was focused on one thing, and that was winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like that whole mentality. It's like, if you want to be the absolute best of the best, you're going to have to sacrifice. You sacrifice that free time with your friends, you sacrifice that time with your family or sleeping or whatever. And it's like, at some point you have to weigh the benefits, the pros and the cons. You have to determine, okay, I want to be the absolute best, but do I want to go down that path of being, I mean, you have to have that mentality of outwork absolutely everybody. Don't like just hang around with your competitors, because it's at that point your guard's down, you're not practicing the most efficiently you could be. It's just there's so many things you would have to sacrifice in order to live that life. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I understand Tiger Woods was... Have you ever seen that documentary I think PGA put out of Tiger Woods?
I don't know if I have. I don't think so.
It's a really good documentary. I think it's on YouTube, but it's an awesome documentary. But at the end of the day, if you want to be that Tiger Woods, you're going to have to sacrifice absolutely everything. It's like you want to win as much as you want to breathe. It's like that's real. You, in order to be that good, that's something you have to put up with. And it's a lot of the time we have to question, it's like, okay, am I willing to make that sacrifice? And most people aren't. So that's why the people like Tiger come up, because nobody else wants to sacrifice all of that.
Yeah, and when it comes to sports, it's not only the ability physically to be able to do those things, but it's the ability mentally. And sometimes the only way you get to that mental approach and that confidence is by how much time and effort you put into it physically, to where you've gotten to a point where you realize that you're the best, that nobody else can do this, and that at this point right now, even though you might be in the rough and you have a downhill chip and you have water behind the hole right there at the Masters, and you know what? Yeah, it might go in the water, but I'm going to try to make this. Uh-huh. And he does. You know what I mean? It's because of how many times he's done that. And I think getting back to, we're not specifically talking about that desire to win, but when you want to learn something, it's about ingraining yourself and immersing yourself in that experience or whatever it is that you want to be able to be good at. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, I guess, my next, I guess, question was, how do you create that desire to learn? What are your thoughts on that?
Something that I actually noticed recently was, maybe not noticed recently, but it came to the front of my mind. It was, speaking of that Daily Wire Plus thing, it's listening to those Jordan Peterson lectures or podcasts or whatever. It puts you in the mood to want to learn, to better yourself. Whereas I feel like a lot of the time when I'm working and I have my headphones in and I'm just listening to music, it's like, sure, I would like to learn, but it's not at the forefront of my mind where it's like, okay, this is, I have to be learning, I have to be getting better. Whereas when I'm listening to something like Jordan Peterson, where it's something so informative, I feel like, I don't know, it's almost like I'm doing myself a disservice if I just listen but don't really take in what he's saying and don't apply it to my life. It's just listening to intellectual things makes me want to learn even more outside of what that is that I'm listening to, I guess. It puts you in the mood to learn.
Yeah, and I agree with that. However, they have to be articulated properly so that they're on the educational or intelligence level that you can learn. Because right. There's some things where his stuff, his Maps of Meaning book, it's his first book, it's very, very lengthy, and it's just up here. And again, it's all a progression, right? So we read one book, we read another book, we understand these words, and it's going through the dictionary and learning more words. And, you know, maybe in a few years, I'll be able to comprehend that book a lot more than I currently can. But this platform that we're listening to now with the Daily Wire Plus, it's on my level. Mm. And when it's on my level, it makes it much more enjoyable and easy to learn. So for me, I put that the only way there can be a desire to learn is if the reward for learning has value. And then I read books that will help me change my life and be a better Chad tomorrow than I am today, or that will give me the skills and knowledge to make more money or to be funnier or whatever it is I'm trying to accomplish in that regards. But you have to have some type of goals of what you want to change or accomplish to have a desire to be able to learn those things. And if you don't have those types of goals of, I would like to start working on my car, well, maybe you don't have that desire until your car's not running. Yeah. And then once your car is running, that gives you that desire mm-hmm. to then go search for that YouTube video or whatever it is that creates that. Or you're at work and you think you're going to get that next promotion and you don't. And now it's, well, what can I learn or be able to do to be more valuable so that maybe next time I'm next up, or that I'm able to get some type of a promotion so that I can make more money or whatever it is, making the basketball team, right? In high school, maybe it's about, okay, didn't make it this year. Next year, one, I can increase my vertical. That will help me be better at basketball. Two, get a little bit quicker. Three, be a better shooter. So maybe it's shooting 100 free throws every single day, doing 30 box jumps, calf raises, whatever it is, having those goals and then creating those actionable items that will be able to create and produce those girls is how you learn and progress, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just something that you have to, like you said, it's just something that you have to want to learn. And I feel like for me, it's just stuff that would either advance me in my career path or just something that I'm interested in my daily life. It's like if it's learning to play the piano or looking through like a telescope or whatever, learning to do the Rubik's Cube. It's like, I don't care if people don't like see this as, oh my gosh, that's so crucial to learn. It's like, I don't really care. It's like, is this going to benefit my everyday life? If not, then is it going to impact my career, or am I going to maybe turn a hobby out of this? But it's like learning things that I don't really care about. Sure, that's great. But if I don't care about it, then I'm just going to not really remember any of it. And I'm not really going to learn it or remember it, I guess.
That's something that I've always admired and respected about you, Jake, is that you have a huge desire to learn. And to me, it's astounding about all the different subjects. So, right, you were learning to play the piano one time, you were writing music, now you've been creating games, you were doing the astronomy with the telescope. And so the one thing that I've always struggled with is creating interest and maybe a diverse array of topics. Mm. How have you done that? Like, how are you able just to say, oh, I'm going to go look at the stars now? Like, did that take some work? Does it come naturally to you or what?
I don't know. It just comes naturally. Like, I feel like some things I've just always been interested in. Like, sports, obviously, growing up, it was always sports all around us. But I mean, I remember growing up in like second and third grade when we had to like draw stuff or something. It was always like, I didn't want to draw because I didn't know how to draw. It's like, man, I suck at drawing. I don't want to draw. But then like a little bit later in life, it's like, I see all these other people drawing and I see I admire the art in it, and it's like, okay, that's something that I would be interested in doing. Or I'm fascinated with so much different stuff that it's just, it feels like it's always been a desire, but I'm just kind of taking action on it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Okay. And maybe sometimes the interest that I have and my desire to learn aren't as obvious because I don't have the need for those things. Because, now that I think of it, as you're talking about that the desire has always been there, it's like, you know what? Yeah, like my desire for fashion, I've always really, really enjoyed that, learning about that, how to put colors together, mm-hmm. how to make outfits and stuff like that. Two is creating designs and logos with the clothing line. Three, religion. I've always really enjoyed religion, philosophy, self-improvement, personal development, business, sports. And then fitness, health and fitness, those types of things. I mean, now that I start thinking of those, yeah, those are five or six big ones. But I guess for you, it's just been, I think, more of the artistic side of it. It has come out here maybe in the recent years. And that's where it just seems like, wow, like never really expected that. But it was always there. You were just using your artistic ability through sports.
Yeah, it was just... sports was just kind of the way that I express myself. And now that I don't have sports, it's just feel like, I don't know. I'm not a great talker. I'm not a great socializer, like in public or anything like that. So I guess the way, like I said, I've been getting better at that stuff, but it's just the way that I express myself is, I don't know. I just have to feel like I have to create something or draw something, or even if it's like not any good, I just feel like, the process of learning and the progress, you see the incremental progress, that it just slowly gets better. And I don't know, I feel like I'm just hooked to that feeling, I guess.
It's almost like an addiction.
I don't know. I don't think I would say that, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like that's why I do all these different things. It's just seeing the progress is, I don't know, that's something that's just very attractive to me, I guess.
Okay. Because for me, I don't think I would say it's addiction, but I'm very, very routine driven. And so now it is during the week. I wake up at 4:30. I go to the gym from 4:45 to 7. If it hits 7:15, okay, I'll go to 7:15. And then I'm here and I have breakfast. And this is what I have for breakfast. And I have to have this for breakfast. And this is what I have for lunch. And I have to have this for lunch. And this is what I have for dinner. And it's the exact same thing, because I know this is what's going to fuel my body. Right. It's going to make me feel good. I'm not going to get bloated. I'm not going to get gassy on the weekends. I wake up at this time and I do this. And it's just, I've created this very, very strict regimen where it's almost like military style. Mm-hmm. And it's like you were saying, hey, can we do the podcast at 8? And I'm like, dude, I don't want to do it. Like 7:30. Like, come on, 7:30, yeah, man. Yeah. Which I just try to get these things in my head, because I try to stay so focused on what it is, which I don't really have any super big goals of what I'm trying to do in the universe, but it's just, I don't know. How do you feel about getting off habits and your routine?
Yeah, I feel like routine is something that's super important. And I feel like, I don't know, when I'm at my most productive, I feel like I set myself to a routine. I do this and this and this and then this. Whereas if I don't have a routine, I feel like since I don't have that routine, I find myself slacking off and then not doing any of the things that I would have done if I had a routine set. Where it's just giving myself a time frame to do this, and if it goes over that time frame, that's fine. You're at least doing it and just getting started. Like that whole idea of getting that first step is the hardest step. Whereas I feel like if I just set a specific time frame throughout the day, then I will take that first step. It's more likely that I'll take that first step. Whereas rather than giving a list of, hey, go to the gym, oh, read, oh, learn game design. Whereas if you set specific time frames for those, I feel like I'm more likely to do those.
Yeah, I think that's what's been great about this podcast, is we haven't missed an episode in 12 weeks. Granted, thankfully, neither one of us has gotten sick or anything like that, but it's like every Friday at this time, we know that this is what we're supposed to be doing. And I think me and you also discussed this week is that we would each like to be digging into the Bible deeper and being able to work on our spiritual walk and draw closer to God. And so one way for us to do that is together, but also separate, because we know that when we get together and that we go over these things in the future podcast episodes, that we want to have a good idea, learn these things, have formed opinions, and be able to articulate those opinions that we've read over the Bible and our relationship with God together. And so during the week, we're going to be spending that time doing it. And that's like, for me, this was a really, really enjoyable week for me, because this is a topic that I really enjoy. I really love learning. So I spent a lot of time focused on trying to come up with content and writing everything down. So many ideas. But again, it's because of that routine that I know Friday that's when this is going to be. So I have 6 days to be prepared. And right. I feel like this week I was prepared, you know?
Right. Yeah. And like you said, with like the whole religious side of it, I mean, we were talking about it throughout the week. So I guess this is an announcement to a sense. I don't know when the first episode we're going to be working on, but we're going to be doing like 2 times a week. We're going to upload. We're going to do the Monty's Gems episodes, kind of like we've been doing. We're going to have a specific topic every week and talk about that. But then we want to do a second episode where we're like, we read a little bit of the Bible, and then we obviously go a little bit in depth and we talk about it. And it's, what does this actually mean? How can we use it in our lives? And that'll probably be on the same channel, but it'll just be a second bonus episode every week, I guess. So yeah.
You know, and that's what's been great about this podcast, and I think podcasts in general, and that Bible study podcast, is that we're learning together. Mm. We're talking together. We're learning these things. We're conversing about these. I'm learning about you. Mm. You're learning about me. All of our listeners are also learning, but we're all learning together.
Right.
And that's what's so great and enjoyable about podcasts is the ability for so many people to learn. The people who are on the TV screen, they've had to learn what it is they're presented. Mm-hmm. And now the people that they're sharing it with, the audience, they're learning. And maybe they're going to go share it with other people and they're learning. And it's right. Like, this learning never ends, man.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of like whenever I bring up like a topic from a podcast that I heard or something, it's like, okay, that person just taught that person and I was there learning it at the same time that that person was. And then I'm going to go say this somewhere else and I'm going to teach somebody else and then somebody else is going to hear that. So it's just this constant like domino effect of learning the same thing, but it's you don't know what you don't know. Like there's so much information that it's crazy. Like you would have never even thought about that.
And it's important to not overwhelm yourself yeah. and to be okay and understand that you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that at some point, if you want to learn it, you can learn it, but you'll get there. And that's a progression. And the most enjoyable part of this learning is the journey and the road that we go on and who we meet and the things that we learn that take us there to become someone different today than we were yesterday and someone different tomorrow than we were today. Like, yeah. you know, who I was last year and just how much I've grown over reading and everything I've learned in this past year, I'm super grateful for, mm-hmm. you know, it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so many, I think an important part of learning is you have these ideas and beliefs and whether they're backed up by things that you've learned or they're just predispositions on something that you think. And then the ability to actually learn further into that subject and being able to form an opinion based off of what you actually learned as fact and being able to kind of change your perspective on things and not sticking to one thing, even if it becomes disproven. The ability to change your mindset on something is so crucial, I think. And just the ability to
change. And that's part of being a sponge, to mm-hmm. being a piece of clay, to being moldable, to not being so arrogant or so prideful that this is the only way that it could possibly be. And any of these other things that are hearing are incorrect, mm-hmm. right? That you have to be able to decipher truth, though. And that sometimes that's not easy to do or to be able to dictate where that is. And that's, I think, some of the stumbling block that I caught myself in when it came to religion is there. I don't, like I said in previous episodes, I don't understand how two religious systems can be so mm-hmm. contradictory and so many people believe that they're each teaching the truth. And so it's like, so I want to be perfect. And now I'm just like, all right, I'm done, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, well, I didn't want to give up, but it's like, how do you figure out what the truth is when you have two totally different opposing views saying that their truth is the truth? And so,
right. And then it's those two different religious groups going at each other. And then you take a third party perspective where somebody doesn't know anything about either of them. And then you see them just going after each other saying that that the other person's not right, but then this person's not right. And then from a third party perspective, it's just like, I can't believe any of this because they're just contradicting each other based off of what? It's
right. And then for me, it was even internalized with the feelings, and it wasn't just the words and the teachings, where I was able to feel the pride and the arrogance from people, and it was off-putting to me, and it was discomforting, and it was sad, it hurt. And so once you start receiving those, it's just like pushing away. And so I think, anyways, we'll get into the Bible study later. And so I'll go over all of that. So a great way to learn is to pick up a subject and then ask questions that you would like answers to. You know, when we started doing the podcast episode, I had a very difficult time just thinking of things to say and then having them roll off my tongue easily. And I think we talked about this on previous episodes where I could ask a lot of questions and I could ask them all day long, but coming up with stuff on my own without being asked those questions was extremely hard. So something that I've been able to do that as we've progressed through this podcast is that I start asking myself these questions sometimes when you're speaking. And then I'll be able to answer those questions internally. So maybe instead of you asking me a question, or if I feel like there's going to be some dry air and I think about the subject matter that we're talking about, as I'll ask myself a question. And then that way I don't have the need or the feeling for people to ask me questions in conversations to the point where I'm not sharing when they don't. And then this has helped me to feel confident in my speaking and add more context to the conversation. Because oftentimes if people aren't asking me questions, I feel like they don't want to know me, or they don't want answers, and I have no valuable insight to be able to give. I get disconnected and I start kind of
slowly creeping out of the room.
And then it's just like I'm not engaged, and I feel, oh, well, they don't want to hear anything from me. And you know, that's a really special skill to be able to do that, to be able to listen to what people are saying, ask yourself questions so that you can answer without being asked those questions.
Yeah, I guess I never thought about that, but yeah, I feel like that a lot of the time. It's like, I may know what this person's talking about and they're asking, or not necessarily they're asking, but they're just talking about a subject and they're talking about how they're misinformed by a subject or uninformed. And I have the knowledge to correct it or to speak up and say something and contribute something to the conversation. But I don't know, a lot of the time, if I'm not asked, I don't insert myself. And I have noticed that a lot. It's just, I don't go out of my way to insert myself into a conversation. And it's just, I don't know, I always feel like maybe this person didn't ask because they don't want to hear what I have to say, but it's more than likely it's just they didn't ask because they didn't know that I knew, you know?
Or they don't know how to ask properly. Yeah. And one of the reasons I think me and you are very similar to this, and that it was how we were raised, is, and it was, don't speak unless you're spoken to. And I think a lot of this comes from the Midwest, is it's very reserved, very kind. You're always listening. You're always respecting your elders or whoever it is that's speaking. You don't interject or speak over every other people. Whereas down here in a bigger city, everybody is talking. And so sometimes everybody talking and they're not educated and they're just spitting nonsense, to where I've realized that if I'm, have a really good understanding of a topic, I'll just say, hey, and then boom. And oftentimes I've also realized that when you're learning and when you're sharing, when you can share from deep within your heart and how something has impacted you and not just appear logically, you're able to really give more to that conversation than what you are and what may have already been being given.
Yeah, people feel it more. It feels like there's more to it, regardless of if it's less intelligent than a way somebody else has worded it. It's if it's truly coming from within you and it's something that you truly believe, people can tell. And it's like I said, I keep bringing it up, but people know when you're being genuine, unless you're like, there's obviously psychopaths and narcissists who try to benefit off of fooling people and taking advantage of all these things. But it's like, for the most part, people are trying to do good and they are passionate about a subject. And you can tell when somebody's being genuine, for the most part. And there's just so much more, it's got so much more magnitude when they talk about it.
Yeah, and a great example of this is when we speak, it's like, you know, I could say this is that, you know, people who drink pop are just absolute idiots. Like the amount of sugar in there is not good for them. It's not helpful. Whereas when I sit there and I internalize it and say, not drinking pop has absolutely changed my life. Mm-hmm. I don't have the bloating. I don't have the gas that I used to have. I have way more energy. My joints feel better at 40 than they did at 30. And I'm super blessed and grateful that I was able to get off of it at a younger age to be able to help my health. And just the difference in what I just said and how I just came across. And it was like, because I spoke from the heart and how it impacted me versus just looking at other people. And I think, you know, sometimes personal trainers get a really bad rap because they don't speak from the heart about how personal training or how fitness has impacted them and how it's changed their lives and what it can do for you. And they just sit there and they point the finger at how, where people are and how they're stupid and how they're ignorant and how they're lazy. And that doesn't help anybody. Sales, encouragement, they're all the same. They're all interconnected. It's about reaching people deep down inside of here. And that's how you impact people. And that's how you get people to change.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, like telling people that they're stupid is not going to help anything. It's the ability to teach them something, but also give them a vision of what could become from taking up this, the ability to control your diet, the ability to work out, how it can change your life and all the positive benefits you can get from it, rather than saying, oh, this is something you're not doing. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. This is happening because you're not doing any of this. It's like, okay, sure, maybe tell that person, let them know, inform them. But at some point, it's going to get old. That person's going to stop wanting to hear it. They're not going to listen to you anymore. And eventually, you're just going to get cut out altogether.
Yeah, who wants to be demonized and criticized all day long, every single day? And personally, myself, I've done a bad job of doing that previously. When I get stuck something that I'm passionate about or that I love and I see other people not doing it, I've done a bad job. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I've been Mr. Perfect, and I haven't. It's just about the things that I've learned about how to be more effective in being able to do these things, especially if you really care. There's an approach, and you have to realize that you can't control people, that you can be able to help them or try to help them, but everybody has a choice to make on their own. And that while sometimes we feel like we're all interconnected, each one of us is individually trying to live the best life that we know how. And some of the best ways for us to do that is just to be able to love on others and to, again, encourage them. Having a huge a support group, people who are there for you, who support you no matter what it is that you're doing, is really, really important. That negativity, sometimes I just struggle where I'll come up with ideas, whether it's in work or whatever it might be, and be like, no, they're probably not going to show up for this. They're not going to do this. And it's like, why am I even, keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. Don't share these things with other people, because I already have this passion and this desire to do these things. It's already within Chad. And then I share it, and then people tell me that, and they're like, and I can start getting these, you're right. Mm-hmm. Like, I shouldn't have a game night for the residents on the weekends because everybody's going to be out doing stuff and they're probably not going to show up. It's like, so I'm not going to do it. And it's just like, God, that was stupid. Like, just go do the game night. If nobody shows up, then nobody shows up, and you try it again, and you go and you do it. But for me, one of the biggest ways that I think this is something that's been neglected since our parents were very, very young is the ability to be able to interview effectively. And I think we've spoke about this before, is that our parents grew up in this time where they just work for the same people and there's job security. Mm-hmm. They try to be a valuable employee. And that's what life is about. We're in a day and age where people can continue to progress. They can live at a greater or learn at a greater rate of speed and continue to grow. And there's no reason to not work on your interview skills, to be a better interviewer, and to go out and try to find new opportunities and new jobs. Like, if there's anything that you're going to do or you're going to try to learn, my suggestion to you is to be able to learn to interview properly. Yes, you're going to have a little bit of a skill set or whatever job it is that you're interviewing, but the people who know how to interview properly are going to be the ones that can continue to progress and get better job after job after job, versus the ones who are sitting there busting their butt trying to learn a new skill at that job but not going and then taking that to the interview table to try to work on a new opportunity. It just doesn't work that way. And when you're sitting down there at the interview table and you're sharing your skills, and maybe there's a skill that you're not as qualified as, be confident in the things that you know how to do, but also be confident in the things that you're not qualified to do. And let the people know, hey, Jake, I'm not super qualified in this area, but I can guarantee you one thing is that I am willing to learn like no one else out there. And one of my favorite statements goes something like this, is that, hey, Jake, I don't know everything that there is to know about this, but just like in Major League Baseball, that there's people that become professional baseball players. And every once in a while, there's usually about 27 from each division that they'll become an all-star, and maybe they'll be an all-star, you know, 4 or 5 times throughout their career. Mm-hmm. But Jake, there's people that make it to the Hall of Fame, and those people are always people that everybody wants to have on their team. And I can guarantee you that I'm going to be somebody that's going to be going to the Hall of Fame. If that's something that you're looking for, I'm going to be a good fit for this. And so speaking from confidence and telling them your ability to learn, your work ethic, just making yourself stand out is super, super important. But you have to have confidence. And I think we've talked a lot about this, is that ability to learn, that you only get confidence through learning and working on your skill set.
Yeah, the ability to actually learn, and then something just feels so good about it, being able to take what you've learned and actually apply it to something and prove to yourself that even, I don't know, the lack of confidence in yourself before actually taking it and using it, where it's like, I learned this thing, but did I really learn it? Do I know it all that well? But actually being able to take it and then put it into something, and okay, I did learn it, I do know what I'm talking about, and just building that confidence up. And I feel like before, like we were talking, like instead of talking down on people for not being as informed in a certain subject, it's just, I don't know, my whole perspective on that is you put your time into becoming an expert on this, whether it be a trainer, whether it be in construction or music production or whatever. And then it's like, take somebody for the first time who has never learned any of that stuff. I don't know what they devote their time to, but it's something other, completely different than whatever subject this is going towards. And you can't treat that person as if they dedicated as much time to it as you did. It's like, if somebody's going to the gym for the very first time and you're a personal trainer, and it's like, you have to teach them as if it's their first time. You can't take somebody for the first time and act like they're a professional at it, because people spend their time in different ways. Everybody's completely different. And maybe somebody's never even went to the gym before. Maybe they don't know what a dumbbell is. And you tell them, hey, go grab that dumbbell. And they're like, I don't know what that is. But it's like, you have to put yourself in the perspective of that person and being able to learn for the very first time. It's okay, what was the very first step that I took when I wanted to learn this and eventually get down that path of expertise? It's something really grabs me about just teachers who put themselves in those shoes and just being able to teach somebody from complete beginner, because that's a lot harder said than done. Because once you get in that field of expertise, you can talk to the people that are at the same level as you confidently, and you know what you're talking about and they know what they're talking about. So both of you know what each other are talking about. But if you have to put something in absolute layman's terms, you can't use any terms that are specific to that field. You have to dumb it down to a sense where even a child could understand it. That's a completely different skill. And even if you are an expert in that field, maybe you're not an expert in teaching. And that's something that I feel like everybody could get better at, is just being able to teach somebody who has no prior knowledge on the subject.
Because even though that person who has no prior knowledge on that subject is there, it took a lot for them to get there. You have to put yourself in a super extremely vulnerable position to be able to walk into a door, to a gym, to a classroom, wherever it is, to be able to put yourself at the bottom and say, I know absolutely nothing. I hope to learn something here today from you guys who are experts. I might ask some stupid questions. And without them even saying this, but to put themselves in that position. And the first person who goes and attacks them, that could be the last time that this person ever puts themselves in a vulnerable position to be able to do anything like that, because they were just torn to pieces, dude. Yeah. And I think so many times here while we're in society is why you look at people and they're guarded or they have up walls or they're not willing to share things and they have a hard time being vulnerable is because they were once willing to be vulnerable and they got destroyed and smashed by someone who was trying to be better than them or pounce on them. And it's sad. It really is sad. That's all I have to say about that. Yes.
And it's like something that I guess from my perspective a little bit is going into the video game aspect is I put a lot of time into video games and there's this one video game, Destiny 2. It's like a, I don't know, there, but there's these like puzzles almost called raids and you have to do a certain sequence in a certain order and it has to be like, I don't know, it's very hard to explain, but I found the absolute most joy in learning all of the ins and outs of those raids and those puzzles and just being able to, like, I would put, there's these forums where you put yourself as like a leader and people would join your group and they would join up on you and you would go through the game and you would teach them. And the absolute most fun I had in that game was posting, like, I will teach anybody that's willing to learn this raid. And just the ability to have them know absolutely nothing about that, but going through that to the absolute end, it might take an hour, it might take 3 or 4 hours, but the feeling of overcoming them knowing absolutely nothing and just being able to go through that experience with them, I don't know, there's something that was just nothing like it in that. It was just so fun taking them through that experience and going on that journey with them, learning things for the first time.
I mean, the gift of giving is one of the best experiences that I think we have here on life. Oftentimes, we do it through finances and resources, gifts, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's physical touch, which is something that I've been learning about a lot more about it for myself, is how much I enjoy physical touch, but I haven't really had people come up and hug me or really try to pick on me or whatever it is, tussle around with me as much as I would have liked. So I feel I feel like it's wrong for me to do that. It's not appropriate to like not fist with people at the gym, but as I continue to do it and I enjoy it because there's something special with that. Mm-hmm. But then going into what you're doing is being able to give the gift of learning and sharing. It's a very powerful and like heartwarming experience. Like it's something just from the inside when, you know, you get goosebumps and you're, I don't know if you get that, but yeah, there's goosebumps and yeah.
Or it's like something that really stuck with me lately was, I got sent out to one of the job sites and there were people there that, when foundations are poured, you have to spray them with like this water resistant. It's like a paint. I don't know what it is, but there were two of those guys there and I was they're alone and I had to move like a bunch of windows that were double wide and they were huge windows and I needed help moving them. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, thanks guys. You were a lifesaver. And he's like, nobody's ever told me that before. Thank you. And I was just like, I don't know. That was just something that really stuck with me. It's like something so simple and small that just thanking somebody for their help. It's like that could have like changed the rest of that guy's day or week or month or whatever. And it's just, I don't know. That's just something that really stuck with me.
Again, this is going back into, I don't know if we ever did the love languages, but I can just about guarantee you that that guy's love language is probably words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is someone sharing appreciation, you know, physical touch, gifts, forgetting the other two, but yeah, he probably felt a lot of recognitions in just saying such a simple thing. And sometimes we don't realize how big of an impact we can have on people with such a small, small thing.
Yeah.
And I think, so I guess one of the last places I wanted to go with this is I think the most important way of learning is for us to learn about ourselves, to learn what we like, to learn what we don't like, to learn what our beliefs are, what our fears are, what has caused those fears. And then when something negative happens to us, we have to be able to learn from it. And we do that by asking ourselves, what was my part and role in this situation? And not blaming it on the circumstances or that other person. And then, you know, there's no learning improvement that comes from just placing the blame somewhere else, because the learning stops there. Mm-hmm. If it was their fault or if it was this circumstance's fault, that's it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And then I think one of the great things about making mistakes is that we learn from those mistakes. Now, we learn by making progress, but if we continue to make the same mistake over and over and over, that mm-hmm. inhibits us from being able to learn. And my example of that is if you meet someone and you start calling them by the wrong name and they don't correct you until mm-hmm. far out into the future, to where now, okay, now that you've been told their correct name, the next time you go to see this person, mm-hmm. you're going to have these two options of what to call them, because you've called them the wrong name so many times. And then there's also this new name that they've told you. And mm-hmm. the chances of you knowing which one that is, unless you've put it in your iPhone or something, is yeah. very, very slim because of the learned memory that you've yeah. done by doing that. And then, you know, I'm sharing something that I've learned this year about myself is that I struggle to trust people. I'm always assuming that they have an ulterior motive or that they're trying to trick me in some way. And then, you know, with this way of questioning and thinking, everyone, it creates a lot of walls that I put up before I may even meet someone that I have to try to break down, and that I can't establish sometimes those relationships based on how they're looking at me, or maybe it's other employees and I'm new there. And so I'm sure they hate me because someone else got fired because now I'm there. And so I've created all these ideas and all these things in my head. Whereas it would be a lot better for me in the friendships that I've created if I just recognize that I'm an enjoyable person to be around. Now, I need to do as good a job as I possibly can to believe that and to trust that. But if I tell myself that I'm likable, I'm lovable, I'm enjoyable to be around, it helps me to, when I'm going out in these public settings, to be confident that that's who I am and that's what I am. And when I go up and I approach someone and maybe I'm talking to them and maybe they're off put or they don't want to talk that much, is that that's okay because that's not them, but that doesn't mean that I'm not a likable person or it's not someone that someone wants to be around. And so I'm really working on trying to have that mindset shift. And a lot of it's been about learning about me, is that I've always had this negative thought that people don't like me, they're jealous of me, or I'm just not cool or whatever it might be. And so I don't approach or I don't take these situations and start conversations or whatever it might be, where if I go out with that mindset that I am a likable person and that a smile goes a long way, man, like a fist bump at the gym for people that you've seen there 10, 15 times after a couple of weeks goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to be able to connect and to be able to just establish those deep roots.
Right. And like we were saying, on one of the previous episodes, it's like we're such social creatures that it's like, even if you think it means nothing, the idea of waving to somebody or the idea of giving them a fist bump if you see them or just even saying hello, it's like you don't understand the impact that such little things have on these people's lives. It's like, sure, it might just be a little thing, but it's people look forward to that. And it's like, it's kind of like if you drive by somebody and they're always outside and they always wave at you every single time, it's like you look forward to seeing that and you look forward to that and you drive by and you go every single time. And it's just, I don't know, it's just something you look forward to doing. And I think another thing that you said that was important was learn what you like and what you dislike, and also learn what you think about stuff. Like have stances on subjects rather than just being a fence sitter on every single possible discussion. Like, know your values, know your morals, take a position, and you don't necessarily have to put your position on blast and put it out to the whole entire world, but it's like have a foundation and know what you believe, know what you like, do things that you like. Don't do things that you don't like unless it's something that you thought you liked and what you turn out to dislike. But it's just be confident in who you are and know what you like, know what you dislike. Have stances on something. Don't just be a pushover. So that's something that's been very difficult for me. It's like people ask me about like political questions and it's like, okay, well, I have to sit here and think about, okay, what do I actually feel? What do I actually believe? Whereas I feel like a lot of the time I will be that person in the conversation where I'm not giving anything that says anything about myself, but I'm just asking questions. It's like, okay, why do you believe that? Why do you believe that? Whereas I can see the other side, whether I believe that other side or not. And I can argue from that other position to really get and understand if that's actually truly how they think, or if they're just saying that's how they think. Whereas I feel like a lot of the time I don't really know what I believe in or my stance on a subject, but I'm just trying to understand the other person's stance, I guess.
Right, which is okay. The point of, I think, what you're saying is to be able to develop those stances based on all the information that is coming at you to right. gather, to articulate it, to segment it off, and then to be able to create your own stances. And I think something else you brought up is don't do things you don't like, or don't do things to try to impress others or to try to fit in other situations. And I know that this is something that is super and extremely difficult because yeah. we have a great need to be accepted. And this is something that I still struggle with. And I have made bounds and leaps from that area this past year versus where I was last year, where I couldn't even comprehend, like, Chad, what the hell are you talking about? Like, yeah. don't like try to impress people. It's like, that's what the world is made of. That's what community is. It's about mm-hmm. being accepted. It's about having support, whether it's from your spouse or your children or your parents or your family or yeah. the business that you're trying to grow. You have to have customers. They're supporting you.
Yeah, yeah.
Or from the business that you're working for, they have to be able to support you and want what it is that you're offering. So there has to be that type of acceptance. So yes, it is difficult. But what I'm saying is being able to choose these things so that you can remove yourself from the spots that you're not supposed to be, that inhibit you from being able to be your natural self, and make that much more difficult. Mm-hmm. Because that's where I've spent so much time, so many years in jobs, just fighting and fighting and fighting and not expressing my own opinion, even though I don't agree with what's going on, just kind of sitting there like, well, I got to make money, got to try to provide and try to do something. And I'm sitting at home like praying, hoping that a job will come. Well, I got to try to figure out something. And it's just like, where are these opportunities at? Like, stop fighting against your inner self. Just right. You can go have a job working for someone who you don't share the same values as, or the beliefs as, or possibly for me, even living in a place where it just seems like it's not the same standard as what I want to be around.
Yeah, exactly. I can agree with that. And then another thing that I wanted to say before this podcast was over was, it kind of deals with the subject of learning, but the idea of saying the idea to you about creating a podcast. And in my mind, one of the main things was like, how am I going to have a conversation for 30 minutes or an hour? How much editing I'm going to have to go through to like go through that. But I am so grateful that even from the first episode, I edit the very first couple of seconds from when I push record to telling you it's like, okay, it's recording now. I edit that first couple seconds, and then I edit the last couple seconds of when I push the record button. But I'm so grateful that we've been able to have conversations and keep steady flow of conversations, and we don't pause for 2 minutes, 3 minutes and not have anything to say. It's just the conversation flows so well. And that's one of the main things that I was afraid of when starting a podcast, because it's like, it's such a daunting task, it feels like, because I didn't see myself as a good speaker off the cuff or whatever. It's like, sure, I can put down these talking points, but how far are those going to take me in normal conversation? But dude, I haven't had to edit like any of them. Like from the very first one, it's I edit the very first couple seconds, I edit the very last couple seconds. The rest of it, I don't have to edit at all.
But the main reason for that is that was a fear that I had as well. But a lot of it has to do with the subject matter that we're being able to talk about. And it comes from here. Mm-hmm. And it comes from here. Instead of just trying to figure out what topics are going to be clickbait or what topics is popular out there. There are probably a lot of topics. It would just be extremely difficult for me personally to be able to vocalize about it and be able to speak about it fluently, because I'm not well versed, and it would take a lot of work on a weekly basis to where it would be so draining that I would have to spend so much time and energy trying to learn about it, to try to come up with those topics, to where I just would be able to commit myself to it every week, and I don't think I would want to. Whereas for us, it was about brotherly love, is that we felt disconnected for the past few years, and so we wanted to reconnect. And so I want to learn about you, and I think you're wanting to learn about me. Mm-hmm. We both have experiences to be able to share, things to be able to try to talk about. And so I think that's what has just, you know, made this blossom. If you give me a little bit of gas, I'll start the fire, and you keep me talking. Right, just keep asking questions, and I can really try to formulate ideas and stuff. But for me, I guess the big question I wanted to, you know, ask you is, we're coming into the new year. Like, what do you want to learn?
What do I want to learn? I feel like I want to learn how to like what makes a business actually flow. It's like I see the business from the side of being a worker, and I see like my bosses and all the office people, and I see the work that gets done. Like, I work in construction. I see all the framing getting done. I see all the siding and whatnot. I see all of the work actually getting done, but I want to learn like more behind the scenes. I want to, because eventually at some point I want to start like my own thing, just like improving people's homes. And it's just like, I don't know, I like the idea of running something where maybe it's just me, or maybe it's just me and one other person, where we go and we redo somebody's kitchen or something. Or I like the option to have to, I don't know, like if I'm gonna go, like I went out and quoted somebody for installing new windows, and it's like, they weren't financially ready for it, but I went out and quoted them anyways. And at the end of the day, I was like, listen, if you pay for the windows and all the materials and whatnot, I'll come out and I'll install them for free. I know how to do windows. Whatever. If you pay for the stuff, I would be more than happy to install them for you for free, because it's just, I don't know, it's just something that makes you feel good. And it's like, I want to get into it because I like the idea of people being happy with the end product and improving their homes. Cause it's like, people spend so much time at home that it's like, I feel like that's a sacred place for them. And I just want to be better at the business side of that and how to make that profitable, but not to the point where I get overly greedy. And I don't want to be a billionaire. I don't care about that. I just want to make enough money, but also be able to provide and whatnot, but also be able to give people a fair and reasonable price, and just finding that balance and just working on things behind the scenes, I guess, just learning what that stuff is like.
Well, I think last week you made a huge bound and grasp at being able to do that, because one of the biggest parts of business is being able to build relationships. And obviously you've been able to do that with how you speak, with how you can quote, where your heart's from. And I think you're continuing to learn those types of things. Now, sometimes you're going to have tough negotiators, and right. people are probably just going to want to take you for your heart and try to get things for free when they do have the money, because right. they see that you could do that. So you have to be able to discern and do those things. Mm-hmm. But building relationships, the marketing side of it, being able to provide mm-hmm. value, that's what businesses are. They're very, very easy to understand, as long as one can be efficient and organized. And as a manager, you know how to lead people. You know mm-hmm. what makes them tick, what makes them feel like they have purpose and value inside of a company. You showed another proof of that with how you spoke to that guy last week and say you guys were lifesavers, that how you impact people. And again, it's all about building relationships, whether it's with your employees, whether it's with your bosses, or whether it's with your customers. And then everything else just is pretty easy, because you're starting to set the prices, which you already know how to do based on how much time it's going to take, what the materials are going to cost. And so it's just building the customer base, and that's it.
Yeah. What about you? What's one big thing that you want to learn?
Yeah, so me, like I had mentioned with this religious aspect that we're going to be going into the podcast, is that I really want to devote some time in finding and seeking out the truth, so that I can establish in my mind what type of religion I'm going to be following, so that when it comes time to be able to have a family and raise kids, that I will be founded and grounded in that, so that I wouldn't lead my kids to confusion or have them kind of wondering what those things are, and that I can set the foundations and I can be solid, have a solid grasp of that. And the issue is right now is that I have a logical approach, and so this feeling approach is what I think I'm struggling with, is because you can go to all these churches and you can create this great feeling, whether it's by the music or whether it's what's being said, but I want to know the truth. And so I don't really know how to go about doing that right now. I'm taking steps by reading and educating myself, and I'm going to continue to do that. But I'm really concerned that at the end of this, I'm just going to be just as confused, because there's so much information out there, and I don't know how I'm going to pick that. So I'm hoping that just through this process of doing the Bible study and stuff, that I'll just have more clarity, and my mind won't be so concerned or scattered about it. I would have a better grasp on how I want to go.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you got a story about dad you want to share for this week?
Yeah, this one's not necessarily anything in specific, but just the idea of us starting a second weekly episode and just doing that religious talk is, I just remember, I don't know, when I was super little, we would have these things. I don't know what day of the week it was. I feel like it was like a Wednesday maybe, but we would get together and he would read a little bit of the Bible, or I don't think it was the Bible. It was like one of those, like a Bible study book or something, or it would go over the lessons or whatever. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about, but we would just all get in the living room and he would go over that, and we'd just kind of talk about the Bible. And then at the end of it, we'd pray and we'd do a little prayer circle, and we'd all talk about what we want to pray for and just go through that. And I think that was, I don't know, it was very impactful, I think, regardless of, I don't know, there was a lot of weeks where I probably wasn't even really paying attention, but that is just the idea of getting that routine, like we said, just setting up that foundation for those weeks where I was actually paying attention and listening and taking from it what was there to be given, and just the ability to have that, I guess, is something that I'm grateful for.
Yeah, I think that was a devotional.
Yeah, yeah.
I think is what it was called.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember that. That was a really enjoyable time. Man, you have a great memory, dude. Like, I do not remember all that stuff, because I don't think that was really more than like a 12-week thing that we really did. It wasn't like years on end or anything. So maybe it was just something that stuck out to you at that point in time. But I was like, holy cow, like out of the span of our lives and how much time we spent together, that didn't go for very long. So it's pretty impressive that you were able to remember that.
Huh. Okay.
So All right. Well, what do we got going next week?
Next week,
I don't know if I'm going to be here or not.
Yeah, we don't know if you're going to make it next week, so I might have to look throughout the week, try to find a guest or something, or maybe I'll go solo, or I'm not too sure, but you won't be able to make it next week, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I'm still deciding on that or not, so maybe you guys should stay tuned and see what we have or we don't have for you.
Yeah, there you go. See what we got in store.
See ya.
See you guys.
All right, guys. See ya. See ya.